From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
How's winter shaping up where you are so far? Or more to the point, how's the winter garden looking? What's your view out the window this time of year, and could it be improved with some strategic enhancements, creating a true four-season garden no matter where you are? That's today's topic with the author of a new book called Plants for the Winter Garden. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Walcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Today's guest is nurseryman and landscape designer Warren Leach, who's based in Rehoboth, Massachusetts, where he and his wife operate Tranquil Lake Nursery. Warren is the author of a new book, Plants for the Winter Garden, Perennials, Grasses, Shrubs, and Trees to Add Interest in the Cold and Snow. And I'm glad to welcome him to the podcast today to talk about enhancing the wintertime scenes in our gardens. Hi, Warren. How are you?
Hi, Margaret. Great.
Cold?
Yes, it is really winter. Yep.
Yeah. So before we get started, we'll tell everybody that with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com, I'll do a book giveaway of the new book, and congratulations on the new book.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I know you were, speaking of cold, I know you were, I believe, born and raised in Maine, and for many years you've lived in eastern Massachusetts. So was it just being a citizen of the cold winter zones that kind of got you interested in the subject of winter gardens? Originally sort of self-defense, not wanting to look out the window at blah for 5 or 6 months a year?
Well yes, because you're right. Winter is actually 5 months long in New England, if you count the killing frost in November and through March. So, and making gardens for myself and as well as for clients, we always look to have interest all year long, and having plants that bloom in the wintertime is just adds magic to the garden.
Right, and that's, of course, in the book, they're not all plants that bloom in the winter. There are plants that do lots of different things structurally and color-wise, and including some that bloom in the winter. But there are some that do flower. Like, I don't know about you, but right now for me, and I'm across the Massachusetts border all the way across into New York State, but a similar zone probably. It's almost witch hazel season, yep. Which is weird. I don't think of it 10 years ago, for instance. I don't think of it as being December, January. I think of it as being a little later. And we're talking not about the native witch hazel, but about the intermediate the Asian witch hazels.
Yeah, and also the Hamamelis vernalis, the vernal witch hazel, which is native to the Ozarks. It's a wonderful cultivar called amethyst, which is a very different color. It is amethyst color as opposed to yellow and orange, which you may think of as other witch hazels. And that can actually start blooming in January, although the season for witch hazels, it really varies depending on what the cold and the rain and the climate has been, prior to this time of year.
Right, and so what color are the amethyst blooms?
So it's if you think of the gem amethyst, violet purple.
You're kidding.
No, it's a wonderful color.
Oh my goodness! I how did I miss that? I could have sworn I went through the whole book. Oh my goodness. Well, I've got to put that on my wanted list. That sounds exciting.
And right now I've got the Chinese witch hazel, Hamamelis mollis, Wisley Supreme, is beginning to come into bloom, and that has large yellow flowers and very fragrant. You can smell it for 100 feet away.
Yes, the fragrance is delightful. And the funny thing is that they're like tiny little ribbons almost, you know, the flowers. It's not that they're substantial looking, but if you put your nose up against them, they're quite lovely. You know, the scent is quite lovely.
Yeah, and in mass they show off, and they last. The bloom season can be for 4 or 5 weeks. On coldest days, the flowers kind of curl up like little thermostats, and then they unfurl again on warmer winter days. So you have a really long bloom season.
Right. One of the things that I find kind of sometimes I get aggravated by it, some of the ones that I have of the intermediate, the Asian types, that they're, and this is a word that's also in your book, marcescent. They're marcescent. They hold their faded
They
leaves
don't
from
drop their
previous.
leaves, yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes that looks a little kind of ugly, messy. In some things, it's very beautiful to me to see, and in other things, it's less so. And so, when I'm wanting to look at those beautiful little flowers at this time of year or shortly, if the big leaves are hanging, I forget. I think maybe Palette is one that I have that, which is a yellow flowered one. I think that one hangs on to theirs. Another one I love is, which actually was featured in your book, is I say Jelena, but maybe it's Yelena or Jelena, whatever. And you had it looking very different
Well, it's a
from,
wonderful, warm orange color. And you're right. Some witch hazels have abscess their leaves better than others. And there are cultivars that are known for dropping their leaves and being more attractive in the garden. But I love to have witch hazels top grafted as small standard trees because it allows you to situate other plants underneath them in the garden. And it raises the blooms up even higher.
And what do you graft them on to make
So
them
they're
do that?
grafted on Persian ironwood, which is Parotia persica.
Persica.
And of course,
Oh.
you can graft plants of related species onto each other. So you can graft witch hazels on the native witch hazel, Hamamelis virginiana, but you can also graft it on Parotia.
Right, because most of the ones I have are a kind of a multi-stemmed, almost vase-shaped. That they break low, the different stems break low from the base, and they're on Virginiana. They're grafted onto Virginiana. And so I have to always be watching out for some of those naughty rootstock, the sort of sprouts that come up from the rootstock and want to sort of take over the situation, you know, or at least make a mess, just look ugly.
Yeah, and of course the Parotia foliage is markedly different than the witch hazel foliage. So you still have to patrol that graft union, but it's a lot easier to identify and prune off in the late summer.
Wow, that's a wonderful idea, though. I didn't know that it could be top grafted as a tree form onto a different species. But that's very interesting. And it looked beautiful in the book, and I didn't. It was new to me, visually new to me. But that one, Jelena, or however we say it, that to me is. I have that right outside my beyond my front porch, so it's like right out the living room window. You know, it's the first thing I can see in the winter. This time of winter to come into bloom, and it's close enough just at the edge of the porch that, you know, it's just so inviting and so beautiful and vivid. It's a
Well, that's
wonderful one.
a good way to think about the winter garden is within views from inside and also on the way to the front door. So the entry garden is also a prime location for perhaps analyzing your garden and adding things for winter interest in particular.
Right. Early on, when I started gardening decades ago here, I added a lot of fruit-bearing things, especially a lot of hollies, deciduous winterberry, the native hollies, Ilex verticillata, and I have four big groups of like 10 or so shrubs each, and they're gigantic now and so forth. And my belief at the time was that those were going to be my quote winter garden view, and I sited them accordingly so that I would see them. You know, from certain sight lines of areas of the house that I used in more in the winter and so forth, but the birds had a different idea.
Well, the robins just come in and have a feast.
The cedar waxwings, oh my goodness,
Oh
they
yeah.
went crazy. But fruit, you have a whole, you know, section in the book about fruit for winter, and there are some fruits that hold up a little better, I
So
suppose.
one that is excellent is the red chokeberry, which is Aronia arbutifolia, the cultivar Brilliantissima, is particularly nice. So red chokeberry is a native shrub that you would find growing in perhaps a moist meadow on the edge of a woodland, but it's actually very drought tolerant. And I have sandy soil at Tranquil Lake Nursery, so I've been growing drought-tolerant gardens for decades. And Aronia will grow in full sun as well as partial shade, a member of the rose family, so it has white flowers in May, red fall foliage color. But the fruit is very persistent and will last through the winter. It's not gobbled up by the birds.
It's interesting, the reason. I mean, it's not sugary sweet. It's high in tannins, so it's not appealing until it's really, 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 really weathered, apparently, a lot. Do you know what I mean? It's not
Right.
that juicy, succulent, delicious thing eaten fresh, even by birds. So it holds on. Yeah, I have a lot of the black-fruited one, Melanocarpa, a lot of old plants of that here. And it's not as showy, but I enjoy it in season when the fruit's fresh. And those little white flowers of the aronias, they attract a lot of pollinators. I mean, they're really appealing in their
They do,
time.
and it's an upright shrub, so it can be pruned and thinned out, so you can grow other either herbaceous perennials or other woody plants at its base. So it adds that layered effect in the garden.
So that's a fruit that's going to last a little longer, the red chokeberry. Sort of in the other direction, there are some things that have persistent color, like the conifers, most obviously. And you have a bunch of different areas of the book that talk about conifers in different ways. You have one section called the Gestalt of Groves. The idea of this, it suggests the idea that we make groves, for instance, of a fastigiate conifer, multiples of a fastigiate conifer, for instance, and another chapter called called Fastigiate Forms. So for architecture or just for color, you have ground covering conifers, a lot of exceptional uses. One thing I did write in the beginning was that the birds didn't mess around with was planting on sort of a hillside slope above my backyard, a difficult spot, a transition zone where it was steep. Was planting some ground covering conifers, including that, I think, one that you have in the book, the plum yew, acephalotaxis, the prostrate cephalotaxis harringtonia. It's done so well, and microbiota also. I forget what we call the common name of that, something like
Russian arborvitae.
Right. So what about some ground covery conifers? Because people are always asking for, not just herbaceous ground covers, but
Those are two great, great conifers that are low and spreading. And of course, the deer don't eat the plum yew. They do eat taxus. Of course, my favorite low spreading yew taxus is Taxus baccatori pandens, which has glossy black green foliage, and it's just elegant. And especially when situated next to plants that have, or shrubs or small trees that have a colorful bark. So whether you had red twig dogwoods like Weston Burt with red cardinal red stems next to the dark green yew, or a paper bark maple, it's a great combination.
Right. And I think that's important. Speaking of, juxtaposing things, consciously really to enhance the effect. I mean, those witch hazel flowers that we were talking about earlier, you make the point in the book, I believe, about having those against a backdrop of something, dark green and beautiful like a conifer, means that we can, those little beautiful flowers in their various colors really, really stand out, even at this time of year in the lower light season and so forth.
Yeah, and there are some low-growing shrubs with broadleaf evergreen foliage. And one of my favorites, I think it's underused in New England, although it's maybe more common south, is sweetbox, Sarcococca pucerana humulus. And it also flowers precociously early, sometimes in March. The flowers are small, but they're sweetly fragrant, and you can step out and have that wonderful scent in the garden. It's a low, broadleaf evergreen that might look like a very dwarf Lakothoe, only growing about 18 inches high and great for partial shade.
I haven't grown it, and it's interesting. I know about it, but I haven't ever grown it.
And
I didn't know about the fragrance aspect. That's
yeah,
great.
it also attracts pollen. So on warm winter days, whether the witch hazels are blooming or perhaps hellebores are blooming, there are bees that are out patrolling looking for pollen and nectar. So having plants that will bloom in the wintertime or a very late winter, like the sweet box, is important for the bee population as well. It's a plant that I actually have growing in gardens in the Worcester, Massachusetts area, which is known for being colder. Of course, the coast of Massachusetts and the coast of Rhode Island and Connecticut, which we refer to as the banana belt, where you can grow.
That's a little optimistic, Warren, I think,
Well,
but
you can grow.
okay. Compared to what?
Well, compared to northern New
I
England,
know,
it's the banana belt, yes.
I'm teasing.
And well, of course, John Gwynn in Susquehannock Gardens in Little Compton, Massachusetts, has a great collection of camellias that are just enviable in bloom in December and January.
Right, Rhode Island. He's at Rhode
Rhode
Island.
Island, yes.
Oh no, absolutely. You mentioned the spreading English yew, the Taxus spicata rotundus, and a million years ago, I mean, I don't know how many decades, a long, long time ago, a friend who had Heronswood Nursery, Dan Hinckley, out in the West Coast, he of Pacific Northwest, he sent me some of the gold form of that rotundus aurea,
Oh,
and
wow.
it was like their roots were in little sandwich bags with a little ball of soil, almost like less than a 3-inch pot kind of amount of soil, tied with a twisty tie or a rubber band, like these little balls of soil and these little tiny, maybe, 8-inch rooted whatever cuttings, I guess they were. And he sent me a bunch of them. And they're the size of hippopotamuses, well, short hippopotamuses, but hippopotamuses nonetheless. These days, they're so big, and they're only gold in the warm season. They're not gold at this time of year; they're dark green.
Oh.
So, rotundus aurea is fantastic. It's unbelievably beautiful. It's like they're like a beacon during the growing season. And so that makes me think of gold, and. It's too bad a lot of things that are gold are either deciduous or herbaceous or deciduous trees and shrubs. I always want like a, that beacon kind of feeling, like especially at a distance on an axial view or whatever, even in the winter. And the only thing I have that really does that 100% is it's an Abies. It's a little Caucasian fir called Golden Spreader, I think. Abies nordmanniana, I think, is the genus and species. That damn thing is gold, 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 365 days a year. But you know what I mean? A lot of other things could have dulled down in the winter. Do you have
Yeah.
any gold in the winter in
Well,
your?
there are some conifers that actually become even more accentuate the gold color. And one of them is a Pinus virginiana Waits Golden. And it
Oh.
kind of has. So Pinus virginiana is a tough tree. It's a small pine, not large. It's kind of the southern equivalent of our jack pine in northern New England, which is also very tough. But the foliage after a hard frost turns bright yellow and lasts all winter.
Huh.
And it can be a tree that gets to be perhaps 25 feet, but it could be pruned even at something that was more like 15 or 20 feet and kept in scale in a smaller garden.
Huh. Oh, that's an interesting one to look up because, as I said, I feel like it just gives me such a lift, in the lower light
Well,
season.
it's the color of sunshine.
Yes, exactly.
And there, of
Yeah.
course, there are some herbaceous ground covers that also are bright gold. And one of my favorites is a golden form of sweet flag. So, Japanese sweet flag is a Corus gramineus, and this is the cultivar Ogon, Ogon, which I
Means
believe means
gold.
gold in
Yeah.
Japanese.
Yeah.
And so, it's a plant that is mostly associated with moist conditions in bog gardens, but it's actually very drought tolerant and very evergreen. Makes a low ground cover, slow spreading, about 12 inches high. And the rabbits don't eat it. And of course, the rabbits have been eating all of the sedges, the carexes, but they don't touch the acorus.
I'm not a big rabbit lover over here, by the way. Oh my goodness. They are naughty. They are naughty.
They're even eating woody plants to the ground. Yes.
I know. They make their pristine little cuts. They have very, you know, their dentition, their teeth. They make those fine, clean cuts.
45 degree angle.
Yeah. They don't mutilate something, but they decimate it. You know what I mean? In their very pristine way. Ugh. Yeah. Not fun. So that's a good one. And, you know, another thing that I love for the gold are some of the twig, the shrubs, the willows and dogwoods that have colorful twigs, that are deciduous and have colorful twigs in the winter. I'm just looking out the window up the hill here, and there's like this wonderful, you know, screaming thing, easy to maintain. It's just a pollarded, I think it's, I'm pretty sure it's, let's see, it's Salix alba.
Charismina?
Yeah, it might be. I can't remember which one it is.
There's different forms of Salix alba. And I was recently at Wave Hill in the Bronx, wonderful public garden.
Yes.
And they had a display of both the willow as well as the shrubby dogwoods, which get coppiced in late winter, early spring, cut practically to the ground, and then they regenerate with wonderful wands of new growth that is brightly colored in the wintertime.
And it's just amazing, because all you do to maintain these plants, you know, once you have the, I mean, again, the one I'm talking about is a multi-stem sort of pollarded, so it's like maybe five stems that are as tall as I am, but then shooting up on top of those are, you know, 10 feet of these bright, it's Britsensis. It's Salix alba Britsensis, the one I have, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a coral bark willow or whatever, but
yeah.
And all you have to do is once a year, like you're saying, you know, sometime late winter or whatever, is just take off that old colorful, behead it, coppice it or pollard it, depending on the level you're talking about. And boom, then you have this, you know, lovely plant in the growing season. And then this winter gorgeousness, you know.
There's another small maple that also has bright yellow stems, and it's a form of Acer negundo. It's Acer negundo winter lightning. And I saw that at the National Arboretum probably about 30 years ago, and had to add it to my plant palette. And so it's a small tree. The box elder is a small tree and also can be pollarded. Very hardy, you know, zone 3. But this time of year, the stems are egg yolk yellow. And I have it planted with a white pine in the background, so it really shows off.
Huh. So in the last, you know, we have maybe 3-4 minutes left, and you said something earlier on, kind of about, you know, we should be conscious and think about the areas of the garden that we do view at this time of year. We may not be all over the place, but like the front, the entryway, the front garden, you know, I think, like I was just talking about my willow, the axial views from key windows where we do sit, you know, so how about some guidance from your designer self? We've been talking plants, but your designer self, kind of building on what you said earlier about that. Any, you know, sort of if a client wants to enhance their winter garden and you sort of take that walk around, what are you asking about, thinking about, you know, looking for, what's the guidance? What are some of the...
So there are some choice small scale trees that will fit into fairly small landscapes and even fairly close to the house. So Stewardia, pseudo-camellia, with its wonderful mottled bark. Of course, it has camellia-like flowers that bloom the 4th of July, but the winter aspect of Stewardias are what you grow them for. Wonderful bark, also paper bark maple, Acer grisium.
Mm.
And if you sight it with a west exposure, so you have it backlit in the late afternoon in the winter garden, the exfoliating bark glows like embers. The other thing is, we've talked about evergreens, so combining green plants on the ground plane, and it could be as simple. So Pachycandra terminalis sometimes is frowned upon as being too common, because the cultivar Green Sheen has lacquered leaves, and that was actually selected by a Connecticut nurseman, Dale Chapman, years ago. And Green Sheen is luxurious as a ground cover, a tough ground cover in dry shade. So if you had a stewardia and you underplanted it with something as simple as Pachycandra, and then perhaps had another low-growing conifer or holly next to it, you know, you're building that composition.
Right. And the key with that is, if you're going to use Green Sheen or any Pachycandra, you've got to be, as Marco Stufano, who sort of founded the gardens at Wavehill, said to me a million years ago when I was lamenting some plant that was escaping its boundaries. He said, "Who has the shovel, Margaret, you or the plant?" We've got to be the ones. Yeah, he gives me a lot of that baloney all the time. Yes, you could grow a little of that plant, but it should stay under that stewardia, because it's a terrible invasive that will run up trees in the woods if you are adjacent to woodlands, things like that. So we have to be conscious, you know, we have to utilize it and maintain, be responsible for maintaining it. So, yeah.
Yeah, but in a small city garden, it
yes, yes, yes. No, as I'm saying, it's like we have to use it ethically. Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And of course, plants that bloom in the wintertime, again, besides witch hazels, Mahonia bilii, which is the leather leaf Mahonia, is coming into bloom now, sometimes blooming even the end of December. And the flower buds sometimes don't open fully, but will hold and then continue to open throughout the winter with the kind of a fireworks-shaped inflorescence of yellow bell-like flowers.
Right. That's one where the southern, and you know, speaking of things that get invasive, are southern, southeastern and southern United States. That one's proven to be a woodland invader too. So it works for us. And this is where in each choice of a plant, whatever plant we're talking about, winter interest or otherwise, we all have to do our homework depending on where we garden and how we garden, right?
Yes.
So, yeah. But the Mahonias, and that's a Chinese species, but there are some, I believe, Pacific Northwestern species as well. But the Mahonias are an interesting group of plants. Well, we've run out of time, but I'm glad to speak to you. We'll have a book giveaway with a transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com, and I'm glad to meet you, Warren. Thank you very much, and congratulations again on the book, Plants for the Winter Garden. I'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thanks. And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening, especially winter gardening, meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.